I'm talking to Gretchen Reynolds, and she's the author of The First 20 Minutes, Surprising Science Reveals How We Can Exercise Better, Train Smarter, Live Longer. We talked to her about that when the book came out 2 years ago, but she's also a science writer for the New York Times. And so every week she has something new and something exciting to talk about. Welcome.
And thank you very much for having me again.
The article that I was really excited about talked about exercise with children. And we all know that children should exercise and that they're not exercising enough. And you talked about obesity, which people are worried about. But this study showed something really specific. For one thing, I found out that the brain has executive function. I didn't know that. And then the study showed specifically what exercise does in kids. So tell us about it.
This was a study that was done at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign, which is in the middle of Illinois. And the scientists actually mounted a very ambitious experiment where they recruited more than 200 kids from the surrounding communities and divided them into two groups. And one group was told, just keep doing exactly what you're doing after school. And the other group was told, we are going to start busing you every day after school to the university, and you're going to be part of an after-school program. And this after-school program was basically an exercise program, but it was really designed as a fun program, because one of the things that's happened for a lot of kids is they've stopped playing. They've stopped going out after school and just running around, romping. One of the things that's lost in that is motor skills. Kids are actually not very coordinated nowadays, or not nearly as coordinated. And the scientists were wondering whether both being out of shape and also being uncoordinated would affect children's brains. And so they set up this program that basically was allowing the kids to play. And they had leaders. They showed kids how to play games. They taught them certain motor skills, which they did very subtly by giving them a ball and saying, kick this ball. That's actually teaching kids motor skills. And they also then were monitoring how the kids think. And you mentioned executive function. And executive function is a really important part of thinking. And it's especially important for children. Executive function is basically the adult part of your thinking. It's the thinking that controls concentration. It controls your ability to multitask, to move from one task to another task. It's basically sort of putting thinking on top of your thinking. And kids at about the age of 8 or 9 start pretty dramatically increasing their ability to have executive functioning. And that has a big effect on how they do in school. Kids who have a well-developed ability to function, for their executive function, can concentrate. They have much less likelihood of attention deficit. So you want kids to have really good executive functioning. What other studies have shown is when kids are out of shape, they actually tend to be less able to concentrate in school. They're not as good on some of the tests of math, some other things that really require the ability to sit there and think, and also to filter out extraneous information. Mm-hmm. So the scientists in this case, before any of the playing started, they tested all the kids on their executive function. That there are tests you can do on a computer that will show you how well kids can concentrate, how well they can toggle from one task to another, how well they can filter out extraneous information. And so they did those tests on all of the kids. Then, as I said, half of the kids went about their normal lives. The other half were coming in every day after school for about an hour and a half of playing, of running around, of romping, of being very active. And this continued for an entire school year, which is a really long time in exercise studies. And at the end of that time, they tested all of the kids again, both groups, including the group that was not exercising or was not told to exercise. And they tested both their fitness, they actually tested whether they were aerobically in shape, and they tested how well they could perform in academic tests, and especially tests of executive function. And what they found was the kids who were part of this exercise group, who were running around every day after school, were, first of all, in much better shape. They were aerobically much more able to run. They were fit. The other group were not. They had actually become less aerobically fit over the course of this school year. And the kids who were more fit were also much better at thinking. They could concentrate much better. They could filter out information that wasn't important. They could multitask. And these are all skills that really determine how well kids do in school. So these kids with this really simple after-school program were much better fitted now to perform well in school. It was really a pretty remarkable study.
Mm-hmm. It was very striking. If they don't develop executive function at the age that they're supposed to, at 8 or 9, does that mean they won't develop it later?
Well, this study, it's impossible to say. What we can say for sure is 8 or 9 is the age when you see generally a big leap in kids' ability. These kids, the kids who were running and romping, had a much bigger leap than the other kids. It's not that the kids who were not part of this program had no increase in their executive function. They were fairly normal. They performed okay on the tests. What's important is the kids who were running, romping, playing had a much, much bigger leap in their executive function. They were just performing better. Whether that means that for the rest of their lives they'll think better, we don't know. Science can't tell us. But it certainly means that for the next year, which is important, they are probably going to do better in school. And all that they did was what kids should be doing anyway, which is running around after school. I mean, it's just, it was such a wonderful way to show what all of us who are parents already know to be true, which is our kids should not be coming home after school and sitting on the couch and playing video games or watching TV or whatever. The science is really clear. They should be out moving.
Okay. Is that why they think that kids aren't getting as much exercise? Is it because they watch TV, or is it because they have to be driven every place?
I think both. And also, frankly, the increasing loss of physical education classes in school is having an impact. Across the nation, and certainly in New Mexico, more and more school districts are either eliminating entirely or cutting back substantially on the amount of physical education that occurs in school because of the misguided idea that you need to spend that time, say, studying for math, studying for reading. What happens when you do that is you are denying kids a really important stimulus to their brain development. You are actually making it harder for them to concentrate. You are almost certainly making their academic performance worse. It's not, physical education is not and should not be seen as optional or something that, you know, kids don't need. Clearly they need it, and not just so that they'll settle down for the teachers. They need it for their brain to develop normally. So this is my opinion, but the science is very strong. We need physical education programs during school. We really almost certainly need some kind of activity, either formal or informal, after school. And then as parents, we need to make sure that our kids are not just sitting on the couch after school in the evenings. The more they are up and moving, the better it is for their body and the better it is for their brain.
Good. And just to be clear, as I remember, you are a parent and you live in Santa Fe.
I am a parent, and yes, I live in Santa Fe. I have a 17-year-old who's preparing for college, and he used to run around a lot. he wanted to run around, and there is very good evidence that kids are built to move. They want to be moving. So if we don't actually stifle that, they will take care of it for themselves. Give them the opportunity, they will move, and then their brains will develop much more normally.
Well, this kind of leads to another article that you wrote, and that was about not sitting. And this was not just for kids, this was for everybody.
Yes, there is a really large and persuasive body of evidence that being sedentary, which for most of us means sitting too much, is one of the greatest health problems that we are all facing. There actually have been statistics recently showing that around the globe, more people probably are dying as a result of being sedentary than from smoking. Okay. And that's pretty remarkable.
Mm-hmm. Well, I wonder about that. As I said in my email, that some of the people who are working at KUNM have converted their desks to being standing desks. And I can't really see how that does anything. It seems to me that it would just hurt your back and probably, well, anyway, I can't see what it would do. And I'm talking to Gretchen Reynolds, who is a science writer for the New York Times.
What's interesting about too much sitting is that it is an entirely new disease, basically. Our parents never really had the opportunity to sit too much. So it's only now that science is beginning to understand what happens when we sit for long periods of time without ever standing up. And what they are finding is if you do that, if you sit for, say, 8 hours a day, which many people do with hardly any breaks, they may get up to go to the bathroom, but that's about it. They will actually spend 2 or 3 hours in a seated position. And what that does to your body is it means that the biggest muscle groups in your body, the ones in your back and your legs, are not moving. They are not contracting at all. When that happens, a lot of things happen within your body. One is those big muscles use a lot of fuel. So when they are contracting, they pull a lot of fuel out of your blood. That's blood sugar. If those muscles are not contracting, you tend to get a buildup of blood sugar. That can lead to issues related to insulin resistance, to early diabetes, to all of that. You also do not get, when the muscles are not contracting, you're not producing an enzyme that helps to break up some of the fatty acids in your blood. That actually means you start to have a buildup of cholesterol. And all of this can happen really quickly, which is interesting. They've done studies with young, healthy people where they've had them sit for 2 days straight and basically sit. I mean, they get up and go to the bathroom, but that's about it. At the end of that time, they're already showing problems with insulin resistance and with the beginnings of a buildup of cholesterol. In the study that you referred to that I wrote about very recently, they also found that the more people sat, the more problems they had with part of the cell that's called the telomere, which is actually generally accepted now as a marker of how old your cell is. It actually is a marker of aging within the cell. And the more people sat, the shorter their telomeres were. And that means that no matter what their chronological age, no matter whether they were young or old, their cells were aging fast. So you don't want to sit for long periods of time without getting up and moving around. That does not mean you have to stand up the entire day. There's no evidence that standing up nonstop is either good for you or necessary. What is necessary for good health is to try to stand up at least every 15 or 20 minutes, and certainly every half hour. Stand up, walk around your office. If you like standing up, continue. I've actually built my own little standing desk with boxes. I stand up when I'm trying to write. I actually can think better. Then I sit down for a while. There's no necessity to stand the entire day. Okay. But it's very clear that you need to not sit the entire day.
Okay, good. Okay, well then that leads us actually to another of the articles that you've done recently, and that was about your chronological age as opposed to your I guess, physical age. But
fitness
you,
age.
Fitness, okay.
Yes, this was a really interesting study. I found this one to be very fun to write about, actually. There was a group in Norway that figured out that, and they didn't figure this out specifically, many people have looked at the idea that your chronological age is not the same as what's now being called your fitness age, which basically means how old your heart, lungs, muscles really are. And what's important about fitness age is that study after study has found that how fit you are, how aerobically fit, how good your endurance is a really, really good marker of how long you will live. People who are really fit at the age of 70 are going to live longer, by and large, than someone who is much less fit at the age of 50. So fitness age is really important in terms of longevity. You can figure out your fitness age if you know a marker of endurance called VO2 max, which is how well your muscles use oxygen. Most of us do not know our VO2 max. You have to go to a physiology lab or somewhere like that in order to get it tested. But the folks in Norway at a big university there figured out a way to determine someone's VO2 max by answering a few really easy questions. If you know your waist size, if you know how often you exercise, your age, a couple of other really simple questions, they have found that's a really good way to determine your VO2 max and from that your fitness age, because they can compare. They know what a VO2 max should be for various ages. So if your VO2 max is higher or lower than what's average for that age, then your fitness age is higher or lower than your chronological age. If that sounds complicated, the thing is they actually put together a really great online calculator where all you have to do is go in, answer a couple of questions. It will tell you your VO2 max and it will tell you your fitness age. It's really fun to do. It takes about 5 minutes. And if your fitness age is actually higher than your chronological age, that will definitely give you the impetus to start exercising, because having a fitness age that is higher than your chronological age,
in other words, older.
If you're 50 and your fitness age comes out at 60, mm-hmm. then the evidence is really strong that your longevity is likely to be shorter than it could be. All you have to do to change your fitness age, the chronological age, you have to lie to change it. Fitness age, all you have to do is exercise, and you don't have to exercise a lot. Go out and walk. If you do that for 6 months, you will have lowered your fitness age substantially.
Okay, good. Okay. Well, I'm inspired. What are you working on now? What's going to be next?
Well, actually, this week in the New York Times, the most popular story I've probably ever written is called The Scientific 7-Minute Workout, which was about 12 exercises that you could do in an office that take 7 minutes and that pretty much provide a full-body workout. That came out a year ago and was phenomenally popular, and we are having an update of a new and advanced scientific 7-minute workout that comes out this week, actually, in the Sunday Times magazine. So watch for that.
So you have an article every week about?
Yes. I write every week in a column called Phys Ed, which goes up on Wednesdays. And then once a month, I also write in the Sunday Times magazine.
Okay. Well, you and I have been working to try to get together and do a sort of catch-up since you did your book. And I really enjoyed, and I really am feeling inspired, and I hope our listeners are too.
Thank you so much for having me.